Hey, everybody. I am Darla Branton, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, y'all. There is water. It's a whole pitcher, huh? Oh, there's the glass. This was really all I saw. Well, some things don't change. Oh, man. It's good to see y'all. Y'all look so nice sitting out there. Got to get used to this mic. Now that knot in your stomach thing's catching, isn't it? My sobriety date is September the 16th of 1982, and for that I am eternally grateful. My home group is the Leland Group in Leland, Mississippi, and sometimes fondly we call it the Still Hanging In There Group on Thursday nights. It meets on Monday and Thursday night in St. John's Episcopal Church in Leland, Mississippi, and I'm usually there unless I'm out of town or sick. And if you're ever in Leland, I'd love to have you all come. Milton, thank you so much for staying in touch with Bub and me over the last months. I've really enjoyed hearing from you, and I can tell that this is such a special, special conference. And I'm so thankful to get to be a part of it, and for you all, including my husband and I. I've been sober a little over 20 years, and Bub stood up on 17. I thought it was 18. But anyway, I guess it's coming up soon, 18, in March, that's right. And we've never spoken at a conference together. We've been to a lot of conferences together, and we've done service workshops together, but we've never both spoken together, so this is a real treat for us. Thank you all for having us. I can feel the love and the specialness of this conference to so many people, and I know what all it takes to put on a conference like this, and it doesn't matter though how much you try to give, you just get more back. That's just the way the program has worked in my life over these last years. It's cold outside, y'all. 2 weeks ago, we were in New Orleans wearing shorts, and now we're up here in the mountains freezing, so it's just, but it's so beautiful up here. I love the hills. I'm just comfortable in the hills. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, and it's not as hilly as here, but up in Fayetteville and all up there, it reminds me a lot of this part of Tennessee, and my bones are just comfortable in the hills. I live in the flatland in the Delta now, and it's all totally flat there, so may have nosebleed or something, I don't know, up here. But a lot of the people from the Delta are afraid of the hills. It was so funny when I moved there, they talk about that a lot and being afraid to drive in the hills because it is just totally flat there. I didn't know there was a place like that really in the United States. And I think I've said everything. Maybe God will show up here in a minute. What I'm supposed to do in a general way is tell what I was like and what happened to me and what I'm like today. And really and truly, it's difficult for me to do that. I have to have God's help in so many things in my life today, and this is truly, truly one of them. Telling my story never gets easier. I just try to be willing to do it and ask God to help me do this, and He always has. He's never failed me. I was born in North Little Rock, Arkansas. My father was an alcoholic, and I just loved him very, very much. He was a real special man. And he died 21 years ago today. When I was doing my meditation this morning, I was looking at the date, and I kept thinking, November 22nd. And I told Bub, I said, Daddy died 21 years ago today, and he never got to see me sober. And he was a very special man. I think alcoholics are very special. You know I would. But he was a very special person, and he never was able to get sober. But he did try AA for a while, and my mom found his big book for me the last time I was in Little Rock, and it's real special to me. He did try to come to the program for a while, and I don't know, you know, he just, for whatever reason, he just couldn't take that first step. And he did, he was a fine man, though. And I grew up in alcoholism, and I never thought that I would drink because I hated what it did in our home. I hated the violence. I hated the not knowing what it was going to be like when I got home every day from school. I'm an only child, and that may be an illness unto itself, but we're not here to talk about that tonight. But to me, he was just fine, and I always could understand him. I could always understand and relate to him and relate with him. And I guess that's just a common bond that we have. We understand each other. My mom, I don't know. You know, I don't know if she's Al-Anon or I don't really know. I don't know what my mother is, but she's 85 years old and she lives in Little Rock right now. And she's not able to see very well and can't hear very well. And she won't move to Leland and I'm powerless. So when we leave here Sunday, we're going to see my husband's uncle that lives on Lookout Mountain that he hasn't seen in a while. And then we're driving to Little Rock to get my mom and take her home for Thanksgiving. So that'll be special. That'll be a real special time to get to be with her. But a typical day in my home was that Daddy would get drunk and throw cigarette ashes on the floor, and Mom would sit in the corner and read the Bible. So as I grew up, I learned how to get drunk and read the Bible all at the same time. My dad was an electrical contractor, and he would get drunk and go outside in an electrical storm to show me that there was nothing to be afraid of. And he would get a long cord off of a light with a plug on the end of it and stand out in an electrical storm with that in his mouth. And my mom was so afraid of everything that she would, if it stormed, she would come to school and get me out of school and put me under the bed. And really and truly, until this day, I'm not sure what to do when it storms. I got so many mixed messages growing up, and I hated the drinking part of my dad's life and never knowing really where I stood with him. And I know that this disease is an illness. I know it is, because I know that I would have not ever drank and continued to drink and what happened to me in my life as a result of drinking if it wasn't an illness and it wasn't a disease, because I hated it so bad. I didn't drink all during junior high, and I didn't drink in high school. I didn't drink until I went off to Fayetteville at the University of Arkansas. I didn't ever take a drink because I didn't want it to turn out. I didn't want it to be like my dad. So I know that it is an illness, because once I took that first drink in Fayetteville, and you know, there's some new people sitting out here tonight. I saw when we had the count up, there's some new people sitting out here. And you know, what helped me so much when I came in AA was to listen for how people felt, because you know, it takes a while for us to really admit and accept the fact that we're alcoholics, I think. I think there's a period of time in there, and it really helped me to look at people and listen to what they were saying in meetings and how they felt. And the feelings that I had growing up as a child were, and a lot of us have heard them that have been around here for a while, but I felt so inadequate and so full of fear and like I didn't fit in, and that, you know, I was always guilty about something all of the time that I was growing up. I just felt like something was wrong, you know, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I probably needed to drink way before I drank, you know. They probably should have just taken me right from the delivery room over to AA, you know, now when I really think about it. But, you know, I hated the drinking so that I didn't drink when the other kids did in high school, because I was so afraid of it. But I had all those feelings and what we call in the program the isms, the I self and me. I was so inward and so self-absorbed, and you know, not that I thought so highly of myself growing up, but that I really just thought only of myself and how things were going to affect me and what was going to happen to me, and I was so afraid for me. And basically, that's how it was. And I was pretty much a people pleaser, because, you know, I wanted people to like me. I didn't have anything with inside really to pull from, even though I believed in God from the time I think I joined the church and was baptized when I was 9 years old. And I really believe that that's kept me from blowing my brains out during my alcoholism, was to have some kind of a basis of a religious life, you know, even though I couldn't quit drinking. And I mean, that was true what I said, but about me reading the Bible, but I did. I read the Bible all through my drinking years because I knew that I was in deep trouble. And to me, alcoholism is a praying business, whether you're drunk or sober. That's how it has been for me over these years. And the guilt that I felt growing up, felt like, did I cause my daddy's alcoholism? You know, I don't know. I felt that way growing up. Of course, I know I didn't today, but back then as a child, you know, I thought if I acted better, if I did right, you know, that he wouldn't drink. And of course, we gave him an abuse, and that was always fun because, you know, he would put it under his tongue, and he was a public speaker, and he was real visible in the community and president of Rotary and all the things, you know, and I wish he'd have just stayed at home, you know, because we would try to give him the an abuse, and he'd put it under his tongue and then show up, you know, drunk somewhere. And, you know, yeah, I've got all the Al-Anon in me, too, you know, all those years of doing that. And one time he didn't take that. He nearly died from drinking and taking the antabuse. And I felt like that I had killed him, thought that I had, because I was the one that had given him the antabuse that morning, and I had to watch him. And you know what people look like when they drink on top of antabuse, and I felt like that I was responsible for it. And when I came into AA, I heard a speaker say one time that they felt vaguely responsible for World War II. And I can get that, you know. I get that. I felt that way, you know, all my life, just vaguely responsible for something really serious, and it's bad, and I don't know what it is that I've done. But when I went to the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, my husband loves this story, so I have to tell it. There was a Razorback football player, and I didn't know he was a Razorback football player, and somebody had gotten me a blind date with him, and we went out to this bonfire out there at Fayetteville, and when we got out of the car that night, everybody started yelling, "Woo, Pig Suey!" And I thought they were talking about me. So, needless to say, I mean, I've never drank right, you know. I never, ever drank right from the first time that I drank. I'm a blackout drinker, and after, I felt so badly about myself and unworthy, you know, to be with this guy and everything else, and I'd had a few drinks before that at different times, and so that night I just proceeded. Once I took the first drink, you know, I was gone, and I was drunk that night, and there were just like there were instructions on the bottle that said, drink all this till it's gone. You know, that's just the way I drank it, and then you get some more. And they took me somewhere that night after the bonfire, I don't know where. I always wanted to be a good girl. I always wanted to do things right. I wanted to try hard. I was a good Baptist girl. You know, Baptists don't drink. But anyway, I came home from that. They took me somewhere that night, and I don't know where. And I spent, from the time that I was 19 years old until I was 34 when I came into AA, that was pretty much my life. And all the feelings that I had told you about earlier, the feelings of insecurity and fear and not feeling in and petrified, I mean just totally petrified of life, it just seemed like the alcohol just took those problems away. You know, I didn't worry about what you thought about me. I didn't worry about whether I was pleasing you or not. You know, I didn't worry if you thought I was cute or not cute or whatever. I mean, the alcohol just changed me that much. You know, and I really think that's what alcoholism is, you know, what the alcoholism is. You know, there are heavy drinkers and then there are alcoholics. And what, to me, it is, of course, the big book says that, you know, once we take something to drink, if we can't stop when we want to, then we are probably alcoholic. But to me, the part about the ism part of it, there are some people who can drink. I watch them, and I know you all watch them too. And they can have one or two and put it down, and they're not using self will or anything else to stop. They don't have that craving that's set up inside of them that makes them have to have another one and another one and another one. And also, it doesn't seem to do anything for them like it did for me. I mean, it just totally made me free. You know, I was just free. You know, and I was like, whoa, you know, because I was pretty self-centered and shy. And the alcohol, you know, I'd call you in the middle of the night. I thought you wanted to hear from me. it didn't matter. I just thought it just changed me that much. And when I wasn't drinking, you know, I couldn't do that. I couldn't say, you know, what I felt and what I thought. I couldn't. It was like the cat had my tongue, you know. And good girls are not supposed to get angry. Oh God, you know. And I would get so drunk, and especially on wine, get so drunk on wine, and I mean, I would chew you out one side and down the other, and I would just let you have it. And I could just remember parts of all that. And my ex-husband, one of them, would tell me the next day, you know, they would tell me all this stuff I said, and that I used all these words that don't even go together. You know, not that I didn't cuss, but I mean, they just weren't used together, right? You know, and I thought that he was telling me, making me think I was crazy. And so I'd write down all this stuff that he had said I said, you know, and oh gosh, you know, just the insanity of alcoholism for me. And so there were years of drinking like that and trying to find somebody to make me happy and to make me feel better about myself. And you know how women are, and I think men too. You know, I've known a lot of alcoholics over the years, and I think we all want a keeper. And I was trying to look for some guy or somebody that was going to make me feel better about myself, because I felt so terrible about myself. And the years of the alcohol use, I had no idea when I started drinking that it was going to totally destroy my life. I was just trying to have fun. I was trying to fit in, and I was trying to have a good time, and I was trying not to feel the way that I felt. And it seemed like that it was worth it to me for a long time, that I had to go through all the things that I had to go through. And the book talks about the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that I felt from having to live that way. Blackout drinking is really weird. You know, not all alcoholics have them, I don't think, but I sure was one that did. And not all alcoholics eat a whole lot, you know, after they're drinking. But, you know, if you stick around here long enough and you keep telling your story long enough, somebody somewhere is going to come up to you and say, I did that, or I did this, or I did the other. And I was one of the ones that once I would get drunk, I would want to eat stuff. And it would make me so mad because I wouldn't remember it the next day. And I was always on a diet. You know, one time I moved and I found this thing that said, this week I'm only going to have salads and beer. But I was always on a diet, and once I'd get drunk and I wouldn't remember anything, and the next morning I'd wake up and there'd be like ice cream cans and, you know, candy. It was always sugar stuff, you know, the next day, and all that stuff would be around my bed, and I'd think, God, I wish I could remember, you know, eating all that stuff. I was just totally blacked out. And one night I went to Krispy Kreme Donuts. Somebody took me there, and I was in Krispy Kreme Donuts in a blackout, and that's a weird place to come out of a blackout, because it is really light in there, you know, it's like, whoa, you know. And so all of a sudden, this guy was standing behind the counter, he looked at me, and he said, how many donuts do you want, lady? I said, well, how many have I had? You know, I had no idea, and I had powdered sugar all over my hair and all over this really beautiful blue outfit and everything. I have no idea how I got home that night, or where that blue outfit is for the matter of that. We lose more things, don't we? I mean, you could fill this room up, you know, with stuff that you lose, you know, in blackouts. And I was scared to death to drive. I mean, I was petrified to drive. So I used me, and I knew that I was totally out of control, and I knew that it wasn't right, but I couldn't do anything different. And I used men to drive me places, because the one thing that I always felt like was that I could take just about anything, but I couldn't take killing somebody. You know, I couldn't stand the thought that if I woke up in jail and they said I had run over somebody or hurt somebody or killed somebody, that I could take a lot of things, you know, because the alcohol was the only thing I had going for me, and I didn't want anybody to take it away from me, but, you know, I just didn't think that. And there were times in blackouts that I drove, and oh, God, you know, the next day I'd have to check the car, you know. I'm describing to you the insanity of alcoholism for me, you know, because I would get up the next day, and if I had driven and I didn't know where I went, I couldn't find my keys or my purse, or if there had been a hit and run, say maybe 3 days before that, you know, I thought that I had done it, or I'd look at the car. I mean, because I just hated my guts for having to act that way and having to be that way and look at the car to see if it had dents on it or blood or my clothes had blood on it or whatever. And, you know, I hated living that way. And I'd get up the next day and try to piece the night before together. And it just, some parts of it would come, you know, but then it would go away. And I would ask people, I wanted to know. And I was with people, I'd say, what did I do last night? You know, what did I say? Where did I go? The answer was, oh, you just got drunk. You know, oh, you just got drunk. You know, Darla's a sweet girl. She just got drunk. You know, I got so tired of hearing, oh, she just got drunk. But the guilt of this and the insanity of this was I started going to the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic, and really I started going before I just started drinking. And but I ended up going to the Arkansas Psychiatric Clinic for 17 years before the program of AA. And I would go out there, and they had me on all kinds of stuff, you know. And the first thing that I would say to the pharmacist, you know, when they'd give me whatever they'd give me from the clinic out there, I'd say, can you drink with it? You know, because I didn't want to die from drinking, you know. I just didn't want to be where I was. You know, I wanted to go from here over to here into oblivion, you know. All the movie stars back then were dying, you know, from the pills and the booze, you know, and the rock stars and all. I just didn't want to die. I just didn't want to be in reality, you know. Just get me away from reality and the responsibilities of the world. And my shrinks, and there are many wonderful shrinks, you know, that today that understand about alcoholism, but in the late 70s and early 70s and 60s, you know, I don't really think the ones that I saw got it. And, you know, they would say, well, why don't you just have a couple of drinks and relax? And I'd say, oh, God, do I need to relax, you know? But they didn't get, you know, that once I had the couple of drinks, it was going to set that craving off, and then, you know, I'd be off and running. And they were always telling me things like, you know, you need to confront your mother-in-law and you need to do this, you know. And yeah, all that sounded right, you know, but there were some steps in there that I didn't get and that they didn't get, you know, is that I was so full of fear, I couldn't go confront my mother-in-law without a couple of drinks, or three, or four, or five, you know. And by the time I got to confront my mother-in-law, guess what, I was drunk, you know. And nobody listens to a drunk, do they? You know, they just drunk. So, you know, that's just the kind of life that I had to lead to be able to feel a little bit better about myself. And you all know the rest of the story, that eventually the alcohol quits working. And then all the things that I ran from, the fear, the anxiety, the anger, the resentments, all those things that I didn't want to deal with, being responsible in life, all those things were amplified 100 times worse when the alcohol quit working for me. They were all there and only magnified much more than what they were when I first, you know, was alive, and they were just much worse. So, you know, alcoholism is just, it's just a vicious cycle. It was a vicious cycle for me. And September the 16th of 1982, I was at the shrink's office just like I always was. And I had gone through two marriages, and both of those had ended as a direct result of my alcoholism. And I know that today. I never had any children, and I'm grateful for that today, because I could not take care of myself during all those years. And it's a miracle that I'm alive today, because I put myself in so many places with so many people that I had no business being with. And I know that God has always been with me, or I would not be up here before you all today, tonight. And but I went to the shrink's office September the 16th that morning. And if y'all are sitting out here tonight, you know that God has worked in your life. And it's just like God said, this one's ready, because I had been drunk at Bennigan's the night before. I had no plan of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the next day I was in AA. And when I went to the shrink that morning, she said, Darla, I'm calling Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, call them, I don't care. And I didn't care about her. I didn't care about me. All those feelings that I had talked about, they were dead. They were gone. And I was just a dead person walking around. You know, there was nobody home. The lights were off. And all the hopes and dreams that I had ever had in my life, it was all over. I was dead of feelings. And I can remember driving to the shrink's office that morning over that big old Arkansas River Bridge out there. And I just was numb from my waist down. And I don't know what that is, if that's a paralysis. I don't know what it was. But, I mean, I was numb. My heart was racing. I kept thinking, you know, can you just sit up here and die, you know, driving? Because I just, you know, it was, everything was over in my life. And I didn't know there was another way to live. Well, she called Alcoholics Anonymous, and the guy that she called wasn't there. I walked out of that shrink's office that morning, and I thought to myself, God, you know, I'm so glad that man wasn't there, because I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was just an old room full of old men. And I like old men, you know, but I just didn't want to spend all of my rest of my life with a bunch of old men, you know, sitting around under this light, you know, with smoke and everything, and just saying, oh, please, Harold, don't drink. Please don't drink, you know. I thought that's what they did, just begging each other not to drink up in there. And I walked out from there, and I went back to my job, and I was too drunk, really, to sit in the chair. And you know how you smell like booze the next day? But I didn't know that, you know, but I can remember people backing up from me, you know, when they come into my work, it's like, whoa, you know. And several years before that, the book talks about, you know, we try all different things. Don't take a trip, you know, don't do this, don't do that. Well, I tried all the health spas and all that stuff, and I was running 10K marathons, and I'd get up in the morning with a terrible hangover, and you don't know if you're going to live or die, and you're trying to be responsible and be at work, and I'd be just so sick, and I'd run like 6 or 7 miles, go get in the sauna, sweat out as much as I could, you know, so I could be in a size 8 dress by the time to go to work, you know, because you just blow up like that, you know, from drinking 2 or 3 gallons of wine. And, you know, weight was always real important to me, because I thought if I looked right, you know, then people wouldn't be running from me. They wouldn't be going away from me. I tried to look at anything that I could possibly look at that was wrong, why people didn't want to be around me other than my drinking. Because that was the only thing that was working for me, and I didn't want them to take that away from me. I just didn't want them to take it from me. And I was so afraid that they were going to. But I went through all the running thing and all the health stuff, and I couldn't give that up. And so when I got to work that day and sat in the chair, this man just called. He's a relative of mine, and I knew he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew he had about 10 years sobriety. And I used to watch him at family get-togethers. He's the only man I knew in the world in AA that was sober. So, you know, I realize I have to be careful with what I do and how I act and how I say what I say, because I don't ever know when somebody might be watching me, you know, to see how I'm acting about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was watching James, and he'd always have a big tumbler of iced tea, and whenever we'd be over there, and everybody else would be drinking. And there was a Slitz commercial that came on TV one time during one of the football games, and James said, boy, that Slitz beer looks good. And I thought, that program doesn't work. Just anything to keep me from, you know, thinking about AA or having to get sober. I couldn't imagine a life without drinking. I couldn't imagine a life without drinking. That had been my whole life. I knew a guy that didn't drink, and I didn't want to be around him. I mean, what do you do with people that don't drink? I mean, they're just like Martians or something to me. But I couldn't imagine that. And when I got to work that day, James called me, and he wasn't calling me about AA, you know, he wasn't coming out to recruit me or anything. He was calling me about real estate. But I just had this feeling inside of me. I just had a feeling inside of me that something had to change, that I couldn't go on living the way I was living anymore. I was sick, drunk, and crazy. I really couldn't hold down a job. I hated my guts. My daddy was dead, and he had died, and I loved him so much, and he was gone. My mom and I didn't get along. My ex-husbands were gone. All the people with all the money, you know, had quit bailing me out. Daddy died bankrupt as a result of his alcoholism, and he had bailed me out all the years, and he was always going to continue to bail me out because he had the same illness that I had, and he felt bad, and he felt guilty about it. And I don't think that my dad died so that I could get sober, but I don't think I could have ever gotten sober with him alive, because he would have kept bailing me out and bailing me out and bailing me out. But he did die bankrupt, and all the husbands were gone, and there was no more men, no more money, no more nothing. And I was sick, drunk, and crazy, and I didn't have any other way. Some people, you know, don't have to go down that far. I see a lot of people come in AA and they don't have to lose every single thing. But I'm so hard-headed. I'm so stubborn. You know, I want to do things my way, by God, until it just about kills me and everybody else. And I couldn't see it. And James called me that day, and I just looked up in the ceiling, and I told y'all I had a God in my life. I had prayed. And several years before I got sober, I asked God, I said, if there's anything you could possibly do. I was down on the track running at the high school, running a hangover off. And if there was anything you could possibly do with a life like this that could help anyone else, I sure would appreciate you doing it. And it was 2 years later before I got sober, because God knew that I wasn't ready. I had some more drinking to do. But that particular morning, I told him, I said, James, I said, I think I have a drinking problem. Are you surprised? He said, good God, no, darling. He said, I have seen you drink so many times, you can't quit. And I said, well, what are we going to do? Because me don't know how to do nothing. You know, I want somebody else to do it for me. You know, somebody else do it for me, please. You know, I don't want to do it. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I do. He said, I'll come over to your house tomorrow, and I'll bring you a big book. He did a perfect 12-step call on me. I didn't drink that night for some reason. I just didn't drink that night. Went home, went to bed. James came over the next day, brought the big book. And I remember him telling me, he said, now I'm going to give you this book, but if you ever drink again, you're going to have to pay for it. And I didn't have any money, so I thought I better not. But he did a perfect 12-step call on me, and he told me all about his life. And he had been a St. Louis Cardinal baseball player, and he had drank that career up. And he told me everything about his life, and he left the book there with me. And he said, I want you to read this book and then call me back and tell me if you're alcoholic or not. And I read the book in 3 days, because I like to do everything really fast, and I have no patience about anything. And I read it in 3 days, and I called him back, and I said, yeah. And now I know that it was just so much my time to get sober, because I was sitting in my grandmother's living room, because I didn't have a house. They were letting me live there because she had just passed away, and until the house sold. And I was sitting there in that living room, and for the first time in my life, after I think I'd tried everything in the whole wide world, everything, I had begged them to put me away. I begged them to put me in a sanitarium because I was scared of myself. I was scared of what I was going to do to somebody because I had created a monster. And they wouldn't put me away. They just kept telling me to go to work. I kept thinking, that's the one thing I don't want to do that either. You know, I don't want to be responsible. I don't know how to be responsible. So... But anyway, he had me read that book, and I called him back, and I said, yeah, James, I'm an alcoholic. And he said, well, there's a lady here in Little Rock that will help you. He said, here in Little Rock, men don't sponsor women. He said, but I have the name of a lady, and she will help you. And he gave me her number, and I know that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired because I called her. I called this woman. And in 1982 in Little Rock, I thought to myself, any woman who's going to say out loud that they're alcoholic is going to look like about 100 miles of bad road, and all their teeth are going to be knocked out, and their hair's going to be standing all up on end and everything, because that's just what I thought alcoholic woman was, you know, like a bag lady, you know, under the bridge or whatever. And I called her, and I said, James said call you, and I think I'm alcoholic. And she said, well, I'll meet you at a meeting tonight. And this God that I knew, it was called the Cosmopolitan Group there in Little Rock, and the God that I knew right then, I had one, because when I pulled up in that driveway that night, it was a big old monastery there in Little Rock, and there were about 120, 130 people in that room, and everybody was laughing and having fun, of course. And I was out there in the car, and I said, come on, God, let's go in here and see what I've gotten myself into now. And when I told my aunt that I had come into AA, she said, yeah, darling, try that. You've tried everything else. And, you know, that's really what I thought that this was going to be. You know, it's just one more thing that I was going to try. It was just one more thing, try to make me feel better for a minute. And I can't believe that I'm still here, you know, 20 years later, and still feel like I have so much to learn, so much more to grow, and so much more that I want to know about my relationship with God and people. And I've learned so much, you know, but I've got such a long way to go. And in that night there, when I walked in, there my Margaret was, and she had beautiful black hair, and then it's gray now. I think I caused a lot of that gray hair. But anyway, it was this beautiful black hair and big black eyes, and I looked like what I thought the alcoholic woman was going to look like. I had this see-through sweater on that I didn't know, you know, you could see through it, and my hair was standing up on end, and they said I was yellow. I don't know. I had eczema all over me. And, you know, it would just run and itch from the anxiety that I had from all those years. And I had terrific anxiety attacks, and I'd have eczema all over me and on my face and everything else. And so Margaret told me, she said, Darla, if you still, well, anyway, the man that was up there speaking that night, all I heard him say was, get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. That's all I needed to hear the man say. You know, we always hear what we need to hear if we just be a little bit open and a little bit willing. So as soon as the meeting was over, I looked at her and I said, would you sponsor me? And she looked up in the ceiling for what I thought was an hour, and I thought, my God, she's going to reject me. I can't take any more rejection. She looked down with those big old black eyes, and she said, yeah, we're going to do this deal. And I didn't know what kind of deal this woman was talking about, but she sure knew. And I got sober under the Little Rock Approach Plan, and it's really watered down a whole lot today. But for me, you know, that was exactly what I needed. And back then, because it was really tough and it was really firm and it was really strong, and I needed every single bit of it. And she said, you will call me every day and we're going to start working the steps right now. Thank God. Thank God. Because if somebody had told me, well, let's wait a year or two until you get to feeling a little better, you know, and get kind of the fog out of your head, you would have another speaker up here tonight, you know. And the Little Rock Approach Plan is not AA, of course. It's just an approach to AA that some people there wrote, and there's copies of it around. But in that Little Rock, and Bill W. saw it, and he said, it's a good thing if you can get them to do it. And I was sick enough and desperate enough and I would do it, because I didn't have another way out. And I knew that I couldn't not drink on my own. So when she told me, you will call me and we'll do this everyday deal, she was serious about this everyday deal. And in this group, this Cosmopolitan group, which was my first home group, and the way the Little Rock Approach Plan was at that time, it is not that way now. I think 1982 was about the last year that they did this. But you had to work the steps to your sponsor's satisfaction before you could be introduced into the group as a full-fledged member of AA. And the night that I stood up there with her, I think I had about 4 months sobriety when she introduced me into the group. And And I was so proud to get to become a member of that group. But I sponsor the people that I sponsor today that way. I mean, if they ask me to sponsor them, then, you know, we're going to start on the steps immediately, you know. And I ask them to call me every single day, every single day, every single day, every single day. And at a certain time, because I want to see how willing that they really are, you know, to get this program and to walk this walk. And I want to get to know them, and I want them to get to know me. But that first year of sobriety was very painful for me, very painful. And there's some people out there who are in their first year right now. And I didn't know if I was washing or hanging out most of that whole year. And it could have really gone either way, except for that I had a sponsor and that I had called her every day, whether I wanted to call her every day or not. She told me which meetings to go to, what time to get there, what time to leave the meeting. You know, that I got there 30 minutes early, that I tried to serve in any way that I could, tried to see how I could be of help to that meeting, and I stayed 30 minutes late. You know, she had definite things that I did all the time. And I was so busy, you know, just going to AA, going to work, coming home, going to meetings. I didn't really have a lot of time other than, you know, just those things. But she and her husband were both really involved in service work. And they would take me down to area assembly. It was a two-day assembly in Little Rock back then at the Sam Peck Hotel. And they would take me down there to area assembly. And my very first area assembly, I sat down there and I just cried and I cried and I cried the whole weekend. And people would come up to me and pat me and they go, "Oh, honey, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And those people down there were just ecstatic. You know, they were so happy about life. And, you know, I thought they were happy. Most of them were drinking or something. I couldn't figure out, you know, what they were all so excited for. But I loved the attention. God, I loved it. I loved the attention. I loved them coming up and patting on me and loving on me and telling me that it was going to be all right, you know. And I got over in my apartment, I got to thinking, you know, and they still haven't really told me that I could think. My thinker's broke. It really is. And I got over there in that apartment and I got to thinking, and I called her up over there and I said, "Margaret, are you and Robert trying to train me up to be something really important in this AA thing, taking me down there to that area assembly?" She said, "Good gosh, Darla." She said, "We're just trying to keep you off the street." But the first year was just so insane in my sobriety. And it actually could have gone any way at any point in any time, except for that I was trying. There would be times I would come home at night from work and I'd think, "I'm not going to go to that meeting. I'm just not going to go tonight. I'm going to just stay home." And then the next thing I'd know, I'd be putting on my shoes, you know, getting ready to go to the meeting. I'd be going out the door, you know, and that's kind of how my sobriety's been these last 20 years. As, you know, my sponsor asked me to remain willing to do anything that Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do that was reasonable. And I have prayed for a yielded will many times to continue to serve this program. I've prayed for it many times because I don't want to go back out and be the way that I was. And I love being able to serve and to give, because I took from people for so long and I drained so many people. You know, it feels so good to be able to contribute something to life. And my God, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved so many lives. And, you know, the fact that God has given us the ability to help other people, it's amazing. You know, because so many people all those years ran from me, and it's so neat to think that God has given me that ability, that one alcoholic can just sit and talk to another alcoholic about what their life was like, and God can work in that, and a person can begin to get better and to change. You know, that's some really, really powerful stuff. And sometimes that's the only time that I'm really able to totally get out of myself, is when I'm working with another alcoholic. That's that freedom that alcohol used to give me. You know, the program has given me everything back, and the feelings and the comfort and what I wanted from the bottle. But the bottle was quick and it didn't last and it wasn't real, you know. And this is slow and it's over a long period of time. The program gives me back the peace, the contentment that I was always looking for, the love that I fit in with people, that people care about me and that I care about the people. And I never could do that before without alcohol. And the program has slowly, over a long period of time, given me that back. But it's taken a lot of footwork on my part and a lot of willingness and a lot of surrender. You know, I think sobriety has been a gift for me, but it's just like any gift. You know, if I don't take care of it, you know, it's not going to be all right. And you know, I've tried to take care of my sobriety. I've served the program in every single capacity that they've ever asked me to do. And George and I were talking about the experience of being delegate, and that was such a powerful experience for me. It's been about 6 years ago that I served the state of Mississippi as delegate at our General Service Conference in New York, and I don't like to fly at all. And when my assembly elected me, I thought to myself, oh my God, I'm going to have to fly to New York, you know. But I wish each and every person could have that experience of seeing our fellowship in action and the dedicated, committed people that are there and how much love that they have for this program. You know, I felt so overwhelmed just to be there, and it's a powerful experience. And I'm so grateful, you know, that my sponsor said you be willing for any reasonable request in AA, and that I kept asking for the willingness and the yielded will to raise my hand to be of service every time that my home group elected somebody or my district or my area. I would have missed it. I would have missed it if I had not been willing and listened to what my sponsor said. But the first year, I had so much trouble getting still because I had just been so wild everywhere. My sponsor would say, get still, just get still. You know, everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right. And I think she just could have had a recording over there on the phone that said, everything will be okay in a little while. In a little while, you know, it's going to get better. Just calm down. Let's be still. Let your life unfold. Let God work in your life. You know, you practice these steps and just let it unfold. Everything's going to be fine. Well, I'm real impatient. And one night I just called up over there and I said, Robert, let me speak to Margaret. And he said, well, she's not here right now. And I said, well, she's been telling me that everything's going to be all right here in a little while. I just want to know one thing, just how the hell long is a little while? And he said, well, the big book describes it as a period of time. Now, oh, well, you know, okay then. If it's in the book, you know, then it's got to be all right. So it was just always those things. You know, it was just a long, long, long period, the 12 and 12 talks about long, long, long period of reconstruction ahead, you know, of willingness. Bub just got me a new little Eskimo Spitz for my 20-year AA birthday, and she is the cutest little thing. And I, you know, as an alcoholic, I'm not very disciplined, really. I mean, you know, and to try to train a dog, you know, and we had an obedient, a lady who's in the program that I sponsor her daughter, and she has the little puppy at the kennel while we're up here. And she said, let me come over and, you know, help y'all learn about discipline with the dog and crating the dog and, you know, so it doesn't go to the bathroom and putting it on the leash. And she tells me to drag that dog all around the house on the leash, you know, it isn't going to hurt it. And she just lays down flat, you know, she ain't going to go anywhere, you know. I just like that. And you know, everything reminds you of the program, you know. The longer you stay sober. And I said, that's breaking that dog's will, you know, so it will be a disciplined, happy dog. It's like what happened to me, you know. I mean, I had, you know, God wasn't being mean to me, you know, or anything like that. But when I took my third step on my knees, you know, he took it seriously. And it's like, you've been sick long enough, sister. You know, we're getting well here. And it's taken a lot of, you know, and he could have zapped me sane had he wanted to. I believe he's all powerful, but it would have scared me to death. I hadn't been sane in so many years. And so it's been such a slow process of breaking of the will and this obedient teacher that we had over there promises me that if I will do this on a daily basis with this dog, you know, and stay on the same schedule and all the things, that dogs love to be disciplined. And the more disciplined they are and the more structure they have, the happier that they are, you know. And that's the way my life has been. You know, my morals, my values, my ideas about life all have changed so much. You know, doesn't take much to make me happy anymore, you know, which I'm so glad, because it used to take so much to make me happy. It used to take all the bright lights and the parties and the fun and everything, you know, and it just ain't that way today. This relationship that I have with God today is the most important thing in my life, because God's portable, you know. You can take him with you, and, you know, he can help me when I'm scared. He can help me when I feel lonely. And, you know, I thought for the longest time in AA that, you know, I had to be married, and God, have I ever sponsored women who, you know, it's the same thing. Oh, if I just had a man, everything would be all right then, you know. Well, I had been married, you know, twice before, so I stayed sober and single in the program 6 years and tried to learn how to date and be a lady. And, you know, dating in AA just sucks. I mean, that's right. You know, just like you're in a fishbowl or something. You know, everybody knows everything. It's just real, you know. Oh God, well, y'all understand. But anyway, I had a difficult time surrendering that about being married in my sobriety, because, you know, I just kept thinking, well, everybody was together at all these conferences, the he and the she and that we always see go on all the time, and I kept thinking something was wrong with me, and I asked my sponsor one time, what's the matter, you know, don't I look right or whatever, and y'all would just have to know my sponsor, but anyway, she said, Robert, come downstairs, and so he walked downstairs, and she said, do you think Darla's attractive? I said, oh, don't do this to me. I'm so embarrassed. And he said, well, she's not that hard to look at. And she, so, you know, so then he said, she said, what I'm trying to tell you is that, you know, God is getting you ready. And when you're ready and he's ready, you know, just don't push anything. Don't try to make anything happen. You just do what's in front of you to do. Let your life fold. And when it's time, and, you know, God will have somebody there. And I believed her. You know, I did. I knew I was trying to walk a spiritual walk, but it was still difficult from time to time. It was like it was about me and, you know, all that stuff. But anyway, I finally accepted the fact, and the surrender went like this, and it took about 4 years to surrender. You know, I surrender with claw marks if it's something real important to me. And so it was like, by God, God, if you want me to be single for the rest of my life, then I'm going to be as happy as I can be doing it one day at a time. And it wasn't too long after that that I met Bub. And we dated 3 years because I was in Little Rock and he was in Leland. And lots of other stuff had to happen in between there, which I'm not God and I don't understand what he was doing. But I think he dumped me once, but he's going to... Bub gets to talk last, and he doesn't really like for me to say that he dumped me, so but anyway, we did get married, and I moved to Leland 15 years ago, and we have a really good marriage. Our home is an AA home, and he loves God, and I do too, and I don't sponsor him, and he doesn't sponsor me. He has a sponsor, and I do too, and we try to keep God in the center of our lives, and we're two, you know, just crazy alcoholics. When we went out to pick the dog up at the vet the last time we were gone, she said, that dog is wild. And Bub said, well, it's no wonder she lives with two crazy people. And, you know, but it's fun. I mean, we have a good time, you know. We have a good time in recovery. He sponsors a lot of people. I sponsor a lot of people. You know, life is good. I mean, and he has two beautiful daughters, Irene and Sarah. And I, like I told you, I couldn't have children. And when we were married, they were 5 and 7. And that was just the perfect age, you know, for me. And they're darling girls. You know, God's just given me back everything, you know, that I lost, and my mind is what I appreciate the most. And I love having that back. But my sponsor kept telling me, you know, if you'll just do what you're supposed to do, that when you get ready for other things to happen in your life, those things will happen in your life. Keep serving the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You all have taught me every single thing that I know about life, because you have trained me in here, for lack of a better word. You know, I've served. I don't concentrate well. I have the concentration span of a gnat still. And y'all would ask me to be secretary of my group, and I didn't want to, but I would do it anyway. You know, secretary of district, take those notes, you know, and it just petrified me. But y'all were always so good to me, and you loved me anyway, you know, even when I messed up. And I've learned slowly, you know, how to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And at my 16th and 17th year, I kept praying. I just said, God, you know, I sell real estate, and I felt like I needed to give back to the community, but I was so sick for so long that I couldn't do anything but just go to Alcoholics Anonymous and meetings, and I wanted to contribute, you know, in other ways. AA is the basis for my life, and it always will be, but it gets us back into the mainstream of life. But I was one of those that couldn't do a lot outside of AA until I was about 15 or 16 years sober, and God, it just happened. You know, everything in my life that's good today has just happened. I haven't had to go out and hunt for it or fight for it. And sales too. You know, it just happens. You don't have to go out and make it happen. If I turn my day over, God has always given me what I've needed. And it's so powerful to see that happen in my life and in other people's lives. But right now I'm president of our Chamber of Commerce there in Leland, and I'm getting ready to be president of our Board of Realtors in Greenville, and I'll go in January. My life is Alcoholics Anonymous, and the only reason I tell you that is because you are my family, and I know that you're proud of this program doing that in my life, that I can, from a sick, drunk, crazy girl, that God transformed my life over a long, long, long period of time, that now I don't have to drain people, that I can serve and contribute something in this life. And I give all the credit to God and Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank y'all for having me, and I look so forward to spending the weekend with you.